Chapter 7. Michael rested his chin in his hands and sighed. I can't believe we're in jail. Disturbing the peace, I snorted, pacing the confines of the holding cell. Trespass, ha! They'd have seen disturbed peace if we hadn't showed up. I jerked a fistful of citations out of my pants pocket. Look at this. Speeding, failure to obey traffic signs, dangerous and reckless operation of a motor vehicle. Oh, yeah, here's the best one. Illegal parking. I'm going to lose my license. You can't blame them, Harry. It isn't as though we could explain what happened in terms that they would understand. I kicked the bars in frustration. Pain lanced up my leg and I immediately regretted it. They'd taken away my boots when I'd been through processing. Adding to my aching ribs, the wounds on my head, and my stiffening fingers, it was too much. I sat down on the bench next to Michael, and with a woof of expelled breath, I get so sick of that, I said. People like you and me stand up to things that these jokers, I made an all-encompassing gesture, would never even dream existed. We don't get paid for it. We hardly even get thanked for it. Michael's tone was unruffled, philosophical. It's the nature of the beast, Harry. I don't mind it so much. I just hate it when something like this happens. I stood up, frustrated again, and started pacing the interior of the cell. What really galls me is that we still don't know why the spirit world's so jumpy. This is big, Michael. If we don't pin down what's causing it, who's causing it? Right. Who's causing it? Who knows what could happen? Michael half-smiled. The Lord will never give you a burden bigger than your shoulders can bear, Harry. All we can do is face what comes and have faith. I gave him a sour glance. I need to get myself some bigger shoulders then. Someone in accounting must have made a mistake. Michael let out a rough, warm laugh and shook his head, then lay back on the bench, crossing his arms beneath his head. What we did was right. Isn't that enough? I thought of all those babies, snuffling and making cute, piteous little sounds as the nurses had rushed about, gathering them up and making sure they were all right, carrying them off to their mommies. One fat little Gerber candidate had simply let out an enormous burp and promptly fallen asleep on the nurse's shoulder. About a dozen little lives, all told, with an open future laid out before them, a future that would have abruptly ended if I hadn't acted. I felt a stupid little smile playing at the corners of my mouth, and a very small, very concrete sense of satisfaction that my indignation hadn't managed to erase. I turned away from Michael so he wouldn't see the smile, and forced myself to sound resigned. Is it enough? I guess it's gonna have to be. Michael laughed again. I flashed him a scowl, and it only drew more merry laughter, so I gave up trying and just leaned against the bars. How long before we get out of here, do you think? I've never been bailed out of jail before, Michael said. You'd be a better judge. Hey, I protested. What's that supposed to mean? Michael's smile faded. Charity, he predicted, is not going to be very happy. I winced. Michael's wife. Yeah, well, all we can do is face what comes and have faith, right? Michael grunted, somehow making it wry. I'll say a prayer to St. Jude. I leaned my head against the bars and closed my eyes. I ached in places I didn't know could ache. I could have dozed off right there. All I want, I said, is to get home, get clean, and go to sleep. An hour or so later, a uniformed officer appeared and opened the door, informing us that we'd made bail. I got a sickly little feeling in my stomach. Michael and I shuffled out of the holding area into the adjacent waiting room. A woman in a roomy dress and a heavy cardigan stood waiting for us, her arms folded over her seventh or eighth month of pregnancy. She was tall, with gorgeous silken blonde hair that fell to her waist in a shining curtain, timelessly lovely features, and dark eyes smoldering with contained anger. Michael Joseph Patrick Carpenter, she snapped, and stalked toward us. Well, actually, she waddled, but the set of her shoulders and her determined expression made it look like a stalk. You're a mess. This is what comes of taking up with bad company. Hello, Angel. Michael rumbled, and leaned over to give the woman a kiss on the cheek. She accepted it with all the loving tolerance of a Komodo dragon. Don't you hello angel me. Do you know what I had to go through to find a babysitter, get all the way out here, get money together, and then get the sword back for you? Hi, Charity, I said brightly. Gee, it's good to see you. It's been, what, 3 or 4 years since we've talked? 5 years, Mr. Dresden, the woman said, shooting me a glare. And the good Lord willing, it will be 5 more before I have to put up with your idiocy again. But I... She thrust her swollen stomach at me like the ram of a Greek warship. Every time you come nosing around, you get Michael into some sort of trouble. And now jail. What will the children think? Look, Charity, it was really important... Mrs. Carpenter, she snarled. It's always really important, Mr. Dresden. Well, my husband has engaged in many important activities without what I dubiously term your help. But it's only when you're around that he seems to come back to me covered in blood. Hey, I protested. I got hurt, too. Good, she said. Maybe it will make you more cautious in the future. I scowled down at the woman. I'll have you know. She grabbed the front of my shirt and dragged my face down to hers. She was surprisingly strong, and she could glare right at me without looking me square in the eyes. I'll have you know, she said, her voice steely, that if you ever get my Michael into trouble so deep that he can't come home to his family, I will make you sorry for it. Tears that had nothing to do with weakness made her eyes bright for a moment, and she shook with emotion. I have to admit, at that particular point, her threat scared me, waddling pregnancy and all. She finally released me and turned back to her husband, gently touching the dark scab on his face. Michael put his arms around her, and with a little cry, she hugged him back, burying her face against his chest and weeping without making any sound. Michael held her very carefully, as if he were afraid of breaking her, and stroked her head. I stood there for a second like a floundering goob. Michael looked up at me and met my gaze for a moment. He then turned, keeping his wife under one arm, and started walking away. I watched the two of them for a moment, walking in step beside one another, while I stood there alone. Then I stuck my hands into my pockets and turned away. I had never noticed before how well the two of them matched one another. Michael, with his quiet strength and unfailing reliability, and Charity, with her blazing passion and unshakable loyalty to her husband. The married thing. Sometimes I look at it and feel like someone from a Dickens novel, standing outside in the cold and staring in at Christmas dinner. Relationships had never really worked for me. I think it's had something to do with all the demons, ghosts, and human sacrifice. As I stood there, brooding, I sensed her presence before I smelled her perfume, a warmth and energy about her that I'd grown to know over the time we'd spent together. Susan paused at the door of the waiting room, looking back over her shoulder. I studied her. I never got tired of that. Susan had dark skin, tanned even darker from our previous weekend at the beach, and raven black hair cut off neatly at her shoulders. She was slender, but curved enough to draw an admiring look from the officer behind the counter as she stood there, in a flirty little skirt and half-top which left her midriff bare. My phone call caught her just as she was leaving for our rendezvous. She turned to me and smiled, her chocolate-colored eyes worried but warm. She tilted her head back behind her where Michael and Charity had gone. They're a beautiful couple, aren't they? I tried to smile back but didn't do so well. They got off to a good start. Susan's eyes studied my face, the cuts there, and the worry in her eyes deepened. Oh? How's that? He rescued her from a fire-breathing dragon. I walked toward her. Sounds nice, she said, and met me halfway, giving me a long and gentle hug that made my bruised ribs ache. You okay?
I'll be okay.
More ghost-busting with Michael. What's his story?
Off the record, publicity could hurt him. He's got kids.
Susan frowned but nodded. All right, she said, and added a flare of melodrama to her words. So, what is he? Some kind of eternal soldier? Maybe a sleeping Arthurian knight woken up in this desperate age to battle the forces of evil? As far as I know, he's a carpenter. Susan arched a brow at me. Who fights ghosts? What, has he got a magic nail gun or something? I tried not to smile. The muscles of the corner of my mouth ached. Not quite. He's a righteous man. He seemed nice enough to me. No, not self-righteous. Righteous. The real deal. He's honest, loyal, faithful. He lives his ideals. It gives him power. Susan frowned. He looks average enough. I'd have expected, I'm not sure, something. A different attitude. That's because he's humble, too, I said. If you'd asked him if he was righteous, he'd laugh at the idea. I guess that's part of it. I never met anyone like him. He's a good man. She pursed her lips. And the sword? Amaracus, I supplied. He named his sword. How very Freudian of him. But his wife just about reached down that clerk's throat to get it back. It's important to him, I said. He believes that it's one of the three weapons given by God to mankind. Three swords. Each of them has a nail that is supposed to be from the cross worked into its design. Only one of the righteous can wield them. The ones who do call themselves the Knights of the Cross. Others call them the Knights of the Sword. Susan frowned. The cross? She said. As in the crucifixion? Capital C? I shrugged uncomfortably. How should I know? Michael believes it. That kind of belief is a power of its own. Maybe that's enough. I took a breath and changed the subject. Anyway, my car got impounded. I had to drive fast, and the CPD didn't like it. Her dark eyes sparkled. Anything worth a story? I laughed tiredly. Don't you ever give up. A girl's got to earn a living, she said, and fell into step beside me on the way out, slipping her arm through mine. Maybe tomorrow. I just want to get back home and get some sleep. No date, I guess. She smiled up at me, but I could see the expression was strained around the edges. I know, she sighed. I shortened my steps a little, and she lengthened hers, though neither of us moved quickly. I know what you're doing is important, Harry. I just wish sometimes that... She broke off, frowning. That what? Nothing, really. It's selfish. That what? I repeated. I found her hand with my bruised fingers and squeezed it gently. She sighed and stopped in the hall, turning to face me. She took both of my hands and didn't look up when she said, I just wish that I could be that important to you, too. An uncomfortable pang hit me in the middle of my sternum. Ow. It hurt to hear that, literally. Susan, I stammered, hey, don't ever think that you're not important to me. Oh, she said, still not looking up. It's not that. Like I said, just selfish. I'll get over it. I just don't want you to feel like... I frowned and took a breath. I don't want you to think that I don't... What I mean to say is that I... love you. That should have been simple enough to say, but the words stuck hard in my throat. I'd never said them to anyone I didn't lose, and every time I told my mouth to make the sounds, something shut down somewhere along the way. Susan looked up at me, her eyes flickering over my face. She reached up a hand and touched the bandage on my forehead, her fingers light, gentle, warm. Silence fell heavy on the hallway, and I stood there, staring stupidly at her. Finally, I leaned down and I kissed her. Hard, like I was trying to push the words out of my useless mouth and into her. I didn't know if she would understand, but she melted into me, all warm, soft tension, smelling of cinnamon, the sweetness of her lips soft and pliant beneath mine. One of my hands drifted to the small of her back, to the smooth, rounded ridges of muscle on either side of her spine, and drew her against me a little harder. Footsteps coming from the other direction made us both smile and break away from the kiss. A female officer walked by. Her lips twisted into a knowing little smirk, and I felt my cheeks flush. Susan took my hand from her back, bending her mouth to put a gentle kiss on my bruised fingers. Don't think you're getting off that easy, Harry Dresden, she said. I'm going to get you to start talking if it kills you. But she didn't press the issue, and together we reclaimed my stuff and left. I fell asleep on the drive back to my apartment, but I woke up when the car crunched into the gravel parking lot beside the stone stairs leading down to my lair in the basement of an old boarding house. We got out of the car, and I stretched, looking around the summer night with a scowl. "What's wrong?" Susan asked. "Mister," I said. "He's usually running right up to me when I come home. I let him out early this morning." "He's a cat, Harry," Susan said, flashing me with a smile. "Maybe he's got a date." "What if he got hit by a car? What if a dog got him?" Susan let out a laugh and walked over to me. My libido noted the sway of her hips in the little skirt with an interest that made my aching muscles cringe. "He's as big as a horse, Harry. I pity the dog that tries something." I reached back into the car for my staff and rod, and then slipped an arm around her. Susan's warmth beside me, the scent of cinnamon drifting up to me from her hair, felt incredibly nice at the end of a long day. But it just didn't feel right to not have Mister run up to me and bowl into my shins in greeting. That should have been enough to tip me off. I'll plead weariness, achiness, and sexual distraction. It came as a total shock to me to feel a wave of cold energy wreathe into my face in tandem with a shadowy form rising up from the steps leading down to my apartment. I froze and took a step back, only to see another silent shape step around the edge of the boarding house and start walking toward us. Goose flesh erupted up and down my arms. Susan caught on a second or two after my wizard senses had given me warning. "Harry," she breathed. "What is it? Who are they?" "Take it easy and get out your car keys," I said, as the two shapes approached us, the waves of cool energy increasing as they did. Light from the distant street lamps reflected in the nearest figure's eyes, gleaming huge and black. "We're getting out of here. They're vampires."